see Jemby again, Bliss? Tell me the truth.
Bliss said, You may, if we return to Salaria.
Will we ever return to Salaria?
Bliss hesitated.
I cannot say. Now we go to Earth, is that right? Isn't that the planet where you say we all originate?
Where our forebears originated, said Bliss.
I can say ancestors,
said Phalum. Yes, we are going to Earth.
Why?
Bliss said lightly, Wouldn't anyone wish to see the world of their ancestors?
I think there's more to it. You all seem so concerned.
But we've never been there before. We don't know what to expect.
I think it is more than that.
Bliss smiled. You've finished eating, Phalum, dear. So why not go to the room and let us have a little serenade on your flute? You're playing it more beautifully all the time. Come, come. She gave Phalum an accelerating pat on the rear end, and off Phalum went, turning only once to give Trevise a thoughtful look. Trevise looked after her with clear distaste. Does that thing read minds?
Don't call her a thing, Trevise, said Bliss sharply.
Does she read minds? You ought to be able to tell.
No, she doesn't. Nor can Gaia, nor can the Second Foundationers. Reading minds in the sense of overhearing a conversation or making out precise ideas is not something that can be done now or in the foreseeable future. We can detect, interpret, and to some extent manipulate emotions, but that is not the same thing at all.
How do you know she can't do this thing that supposedly can't be done?
Because, as you have just said, I ought to be able to tell.
Perhaps she is manipulating you so that you remain ignorant of the fact that she can. Bliss rolled her eyes upward.
Be reasonable, Trevise. Even if she had unusual abilities, she could do nothing with me, for I am not Bliss. I am Gaia. You keep forgetting. Do you know the mental inertia represented by an entire planet? Do you think one isolate, however talented, can overcome that?
You don't know everything, Bliss, so don't be overconfident, said Trevise sullenly. She has been with us not very long. I couldn't learn anything but the rudiments of a language in that time. Yet she already speaks Galactic perfectly, and with virtually a full vocabulary. Yes, I know you've been helping her, but I wish you would stop.
I told you I was helping her, but I also told you she's fearfully intelligent. Intelligent enough so that I would like to have her part of Gaia, if we can gather her in, if she's still young enough. We might learn enough about the Solarians to absorb that entire world eventually. It might well be useful to us.
Does it occur to you that the Solarians are pathological isolates, even by my standards?
They wouldn't stay so as part of Gaia.
I think you're wrong, Bliss. I think that Solarian child is dangerous, and that we should get rid of her.
How? Dump her through the airlock, kill her, chop her up, and add her to our food supply?
Pellerat said, Oh, Bliss. And Trevise said, That's disgusting and completely uncalled for. He listened for a moment. The flute was sounding without flaw or waver, and they had been talking in half whispers. When this is all over, we've got to return her to Solaria, and make sure that Solaria is forever cut off from the galaxy. My own feeling is that it should be destroyed. I distrust and fear it. Bliss thought a while and said,
Trevise, I know that you have the knack of coming to a right decision, but I also know you have been antipathetic to Phalum from the start.
I suspect that may just be because you were humiliated on Solaria and have taken a violent hatred to the planet and its inhabitants as a result. Since I must not tamper with your mind, I can't tell that for sure. Please remember that if we had not taken Phalum with us, we would be on Alpha right now, dead, and I presume buried. I know that, Bliss, but even so. And her intelligence is to be admired, not envied. And her intelligence is to be admired, not envied. I do not envy her. I fear her. Her intelligence? Trevise licked his lips thoughtfully. No, not quite. What then? I don't know, Bliss. If I knew what I feared, I might not have to fear it. It's something I don't quite understand. His voice lowered, as though he were speaking to himself. The galaxy seems to be crowded with things I don't understand. Why did I choose Gaia? Why must I find Earth? Is there a missing assumption in psychohistory? If there is, what is it? And on top of all that, why does Phalum make me uneasy? Bliss said, Unfortunately, I can't answer those questions. She rose and left the room. Pellerat looked after her, then said, Surely things aren't totally black, Golan. We're getting closer and closer to Earth, and once we reach it, all mysteries may be solved. And so far, nothing seems to be making any effort to stop us from reaching it. Trevise's eyes flickered toward Pellerat, and he said in a low voice, I wish something would. Pellerat said, You do? Why should you want that? Frankly, I'd welcome a sign of life. Pellerat's eyes opened wide. Have you found that Earth is radioactive after all? Not quite, but it is warm, a bit warmer than I would have expected. Is that bad? Not necessarily. It may be rather warm, but that wouldn't make it necessarily uninhabitable. The cloud cover is thick, and it is definitely water vapor, so that those clouds, together with a copious water ocean, could tend to keep things livable, despite the temperature we calculated from microwave emissions. I can't be sure yet. It's just that... Yes, Golan? Well, if Earth were radioactive, that might well account for its being warmer than expected. But that doesn't argue the reverse, does it? If it's warmer than expected, that doesn't mean it must be radioactive. No, it doesn't. Trevise managed to force a smile. No use brooding, Genoff. In a day or two, I'll be able to tell more about it, and we'll know for sure. 91. Phalum was sitting on the cot in deep thought when Bliss came into the room. Phalum looked up briefly, then down again. Bliss said quietly, What's the matter, Phalum? Phalum said, Why does Trevise dislike me so much, Bliss? What makes you think he dislikes you? He looks at me impatiently. Is that the word?
It might be the word.
He looks at me impatiently when I am near him. His face always twists a little.
Trevise is having a hard time, Phalum.
Because he's looking for Earth?
Yes.
Phalum thought a while, then said, He is particularly impatient when I think something into moving.
Bliss's lips tightened.
Now, Phalum, didn't I tell you you must not do that, especially when Trevise is present? Well, it was yesterday, right here in this room, and he was in the doorway, and I didn't notice.
I didn't know he was watching. It was just one of Pell's book films anyway, and I was trying to make it stand on one tip. I wasn't doing any harm.
It makes him nervous, Phelim, and I want you not to do it, whether he's watching or not.
Does it make him nervous because he can't do it?
Perhaps.
Can you do it?
Bliss shook her head slowly.
No, I can't.
It doesn't make you nervous when I do it. It doesn't make Pell nervous either.
People are different.
I know,
said Phelim, with a sudden hardness that surprised Bliss and caused her to frown.
What do you know, Phelim?
I'm different.
Of course, I just said so.
People are different. My shape is different. I can move things.
That's true. Phelim said with a shade of rebelliousness,
I must move things. Trevise should not be angry with me for that, and you should not stop me.
But why must you move things?
It is practice. Exercise. Is that the right word?
Not quite. Exercise.
Yes. Jemby always said I must train my...
Transducer lobes?
Yes, and make them strong. Then, when I was grown up, I could power all the robots, even Jemby.
Phelim, who did power all the robots if you did not?
Bander.
Phelim said it very matter-of-factly. Did you know Bander?
Of course. I viewed him many times. I was to be the next estate head. The Bander estate would become the Phelim estate. Jemby told me so.
You mean Bander came to you? Phelim's mouth made a perfect O of shock. She said in a choked voice,
Bander would never come to...
The youngster ran out of breath and panted a bit, then said,
I viewed Bander's image.
Bliss asked hesitantly, How did Bander treat you? Phelim looked at Bliss with a faintly puzzled eye.
Bander would ask me if I needed anything, if I was comfortable. But Jemby was always near me, so I never needed anything, and I was always comfortable.
Her head bent, and she stared at the floor. Then she placed her hands over her eyes and said,
But Jemby stopped. I think it was because Bander stopped, too.
Bliss said, Why do you say that?
I've been thinking about it. Bander powered all the robots. And if Jemby stopped, and all the other robots, too, it must be that Bander stopped. Isn't that so?
Bliss was silent. Phelim said,
But when you take me back to Solaria, I will power Jemby and all the rest of the robots, and I will be happy again.
She was sobbing.
Bliss said, Aren't you happy with us, Phelim? Just a little, sometimes?
Phelim lifted her tear-stained face to Bliss, and her voice trembled as she shook her head and said,
I want Jemby.
In an agony of sympathy, Bliss threw her arms about the youngster.
Oh, Phelim, how I wish I could bring you and Jemby together again.
And was suddenly aware that she was weeping too. 92. Pellerat entered and found them so. He halted in mid-step and said,
What's the matter?
Bliss detached herself and fumbled for a small tissue so that she might wipe her eyes. She shook her head, and Pellerat at once said with heightened concern, But what's the matter? Bliss said,
Phelim, Just rest a little. I'll think of something to make things a little better for you. Remember, I love you just the same way that Jembe did.
She seized Pellerot's elbow and rushed him out into the living room, saying,
It's nothing, Pell. Nothing.
It's Phelim, though, isn't it? She still misses Jembe.
Terribly. And there's nothing we can do about it. I can tell her that I love her, and truthfully I do.
How can you help loving a child so intelligent and gentle?
Fearfully intelligent.
Trevise thinks too intelligent.
She's seen Bander in her time, you know, or viewed it rather as a holographic image. She's not moved by that memory, however. She's very cold and matter-of-fact about it, and I can understand why. There was only the fact that Bander was owner of the estate, and that Phelim would be the next owner that bound them. No other relationship at all.
Does Phelim understand that Bander is her father?
Her mother. If we agree that Phelim is to be regarded as feminine, so is Bander.
Either way, Bliss dear, is Phelim aware of the parental relationship?
I don't know that she would understand what that is. She may, of course, but she gave no hint. However, Pell, she has reasoned out that Bander is dead, for it's dawned on her that Jembe's inactivation must be the result of power loss. And since Bander supplied the power, that frightens me.
Pellerat said thoughtfully, Why should it, Bliss? It's only a logical inference, after all.
Another logical inference can be drawn from that death. Deaths must be few and far distant on Solaria, with its long-lived and isolated spacers. Experience of natural death must be a limited one for any of them, and probably absent altogether for a Solarian child of Phelim's age. If Phelim continues to think of Bander's death, she's going to begin to wonder why Bander died. And the fact that it happened when we strangers were on the planet will surely lead her to the obvious cause and effect.
That we killed Bander?
It wasn't we who killed Bander, Pell. It was I.
She couldn't guess that.
But I would have to tell her that. She is annoyed with Trevise as it is, and he is clearly the leader of the expedition. She would take it for granted that it would be he who would have brought about the death of Bander. And how could I allow Trevise to bear the blame unjustly?
What would it matter, Bliss? The child feels nothing for her mother, only for her robot Jembe.
But the death of the mother meant the death of her robot, too. I almost did own up to my responsibility. I was strongly tempted.
Why?
So I could explain it my way. So I could soothe her, forestall her own discovery of the fact in a reasoning process that would work it out in a way that would offer no justification for it.
But there was justification. It was self-defense. In a moment, we all would have been dead if you had not acted.
It's what I would have said, but I could not bring myself to explain. I was afraid she wouldn't believe me.
Pellerat shook his head. He said, sighing, Do you suppose it might have been better if we had not brought her? The situation makes you so unhappy.
No, said Bliss angrily. Don't say that. It would have made me infinitely more unhappy to have to sit here right now and remember that we had left an innocent child behind to be slaughtered mercilessly because of what we had done.
It's the way of Phelim's world.
Now, Pell, don't fall into Trevise's way of thinking. Isolates find it possible to accept such things and think no more about it. The way of Gaia is to save life, however, not destroy it, or to sit idly by while it is destroyed. Life of all kinds must, we all know, constantly be coming to an end in order that other life might endure, but never uselessly, never to no end. Vander's death, though unavoidable, is hard enough to bear. Phelim's would have been past all bounds.
Ah, well, said Pellerat, I suppose you're right. And in any case, it is not the problem of Phelim concerning which I've come to see you. It's Trevise.
What about Trevise?
Bliss, I'm worried about him. He's waiting to determine the facts about Earth, and I'm not sure he can withstand the strain.
I don't fear for him. I suspect he has a sturdy and stable mind.
We all have our limits. Listen, the planet Earth is warmer than he expected it to be. He told me so. I suspect that he thinks it may be too warm for life, though he's clearly trying to talk himself into believing that's not so.
Maybe he's right. Maybe it's not too warm for life.
Also, he admits it's possible that the warmth might possibly arise from a radioactive crust, but he is refusing to believe that also. In a day or two, we'll be close enough so that the truth of the matter will be unmistakable. What if Earth is radioactive?
Then he'll have to accept the fact.
But I don't know how to say this, or how to put it in mental terms. What if his mind...
Bliss waited, then said wryly, blows a fuse?
Yes, blows a fuse. Shouldn't you do something now to strengthen him, keep him level and under control, so to speak?
No, Pell. I can't believe he's that fragile. And there is a firm Gaian decision that his mind must not be tampered with.
But that's the very point. He has this unusual rightness, or whatever you want to call it. The shock of his entire project falling to nothingness at the moment when it seems successfully concluded may not destroy his brain, but it may destroy his rightness. It's a very unusual property he has. Might it not be unusually fragile, too?
Bliss remained for a moment in thought. Then she shrugged.
Well, perhaps I'll keep an eye on him.
93. For the next 36 hours, Trevise was vaguely aware that Bliss, and to a lesser degree Pellerat, tended to dog his footsteps. Still, that was not utterly unusual in a ship as compact as theirs, and he had other things on his mind. Now, as he sat at the computer, he was aware of them standing just inside the doorway. He looked up at them, his face blank.
Well, he said in a very quiet voice.
Pellerat said rather awkwardly, how are you, Golan?
Trevise said, ask Bliss. She's been staring at me intently for hours. She must be poking through my mind. Aren't you, Bliss?
No, I am not, said Bliss evenly. But if you feel the need for my help, I can try. Do you want my help?
No. Why should I? Leave me alone, both of you.
Pellerat said, please, tell us what's going on.
Guess. Is Earth...
Yes, it is. What everyone insisted on telling us is perfectly true.
Trevise gestured at the viewscreen, where Earth presented its night side and was eclipsing the sun. It was a solid circle of black against the starry sky, its circumference outlined by a broken orange curve.
Pellerat said, is that orange the radioactivity?
No, just refracted sunlight through the atmosphere. It would be a solid orange circle if the atmosphere weren't so cloudy. We can't see the radioactivity. The various radiations, even the gamma rays, are absorbed by the atmosphere. However, they do set up secondary radiations, comparatively feeble ones, but the computer can detect them. They're still invisible to the eye, but the computer can produce a photon of visible light for each particle or wave of radiation it receives and put Earth into false color. Look. And the black circle glowed with a faint, blotchy blue.
How much radioactivity is there?
Asked Bliss in a low voice.
Enough to signify that no human life can exist there?
No life of any kind, said Trevise. The planet is uninhabitable. The last bacterium, the last virus, is long gone.
Can we explore it? Said Pellerat. I mean, in spacesuits.
For a few hours, before we come down with irreversible radiation sickness.
Then what do we do, Golan?
Do? Trevise looked at Pellerat with that same expressionless face.
Do you know what I would like to do? I would like to take you and Bliss and the child back to Gaia and leave you all there forever. Then I would like to go back to Terminus and hand back the ship.
Then I would like to resign from the Council, which ought to make Mayor Brano very happy. Then I would like to live on my pension and let the galaxy go as it will. I won't care about the Selden Plan, or about the Foundation, or about the Second Foundation, or about Gaia. The galaxy can choose its own path. It will last my time, and why should I care a snap as to what happens afterward?
Surely you don't mean it, Golan, said Pellerat urgently.
Trevise stared at him for a while, and then he drew a long breath. No, I don't. But oh, how I wish I could do exactly what I have just outlined to you.
Never mind that. What will you do?
Keep the ship in orbit about the Earth, rest, get over the shock of all this, and think of what to do next. Except that...
Yes?
And Trevise blurted out, What can I do next? What is there further to look for? What is there further to find? Chapter 20. The Nearby World. 94. For four successive meals, Pellerat and Bliss had seen Trevise only at meals. During the rest of the time, he was either in the pilot room or in his bedroom. At mealtimes, he was silent. His lips remained pressed together, and he ate little. At the fourth meal, however, it seemed to Pellerat that some of the unusual gravity had lifted from Trevise's countenance. Pellerat cleared his throat twice, as though preparing to say something, and then retreating. Finally, Trevise looked up at him and said, Well?
Have you thought it out, Golan?
Why do you ask?
You seem less gloomy.
I'm not less gloomy, but I have been thinking, heavily.
May we know what? Asked Pellerat.
Trevise glanced briefly in Bliss's direction. She was looking firmly at her plate, maintaining a careful silence, as though certain that Pellerat would get further than she at this sensitive moment. Trevise said, Are you also curious, Bliss? She raised her eyes for a moment.
Yes, certainly.
Phelim kicked a leg of the table moodily and said, Have we found Earth? Bliss squeezed the youngster's shoulder. Trevise paid no attention. He said, What we must start with is a basic fact. All information concerning Earth has been removed on various worlds.
that is bound to bring us to an inescapable conclusion. Something on Earth is being hidden. And yet, by observation, we see that Earth is radioactively deadly, so that anything on it is automatically hidden. No one can land on it. And from this distance, when we are quite near the outer edge of the magnetosphere and would not care to approach Earth any more closely, there is nothing for us to find.
"Can you be sure of that?" asked Bliss softly.
"I have spent my time at the computer, analyzing Earth in every way it and I can. There is nothing. What's more, I feel there is nothing. Why, then, has data concerning the Earth been wiped out? Surely whatever must be hidden is more effectively hidden now than anyone can easily imagine, and there need be no human gilding of this particular piece of gold."
"It may be," said Pellerat, "that there was indeed something hidden on Earth at a time when it had not yet grown so severely radioactive as to preclude visitors. People on Earth may then have feared that someone might land and find this, whatever it is. It was then that Earth tried to remove information concerning itself. What we have now is a vestigial remnant of that insecure time."
"No, I don't think so," said Trevise. "The removal of information from the Imperial Library at Trantor seems to have taken place very recently." He turned suddenly to Bliss. "Am I right?" Bliss said evenly,
We, Gaia, gathered that much from the troubled mind of the second Foundationer Gendibal when he, you, and I had the meeting with the mayor of Terminus."
Trevise said, "So whatever must have had to be hidden, because there existed the chance of finding it, must still be hiding now. And there must be danger of finding it now, despite the fact that Earth is radioactive."
"How is that possible?" asked Pellerat anxiously.
"Consider," said Trevise. "What if what was on Earth is no longer on Earth, but was removed when the radioactive danger grew greater? Yet though the secret is no longer on Earth, it may be that if we can find Earth, we would be able to reason out the place where the secret has been taken. If that were so, Earth's whereabouts would still have to be hidden."
Phalum's voice piped up again.
"Because if we can't find Earth, Bliss says you'll take me back to Jemby."
Trevise turned toward Phalum and glared, and Bliss said in a low voice,
"I told you we might, Phalum. We'll talk about it later. Right now, go to your room and read, or play the flute, or anything else you want to do. Go. Go."
Phalum, frowning sulkily, left the table.
Pellerat said, "But how can you say that, Golan? Here we are. We've located Earth. Can we now deduce where whatever it is might be if it isn't on Earth?"
It took a moment for Trevise to get over the moment of ill humor Phalum had induced. Then he said, "Why not? Imagine the radioactivity of Earth's crust growing steadily worse. The population would be decreasing steadily through death and emigration. And the secret, whatever it is, would be in increasing danger. Who would remain to protect it? Eventually, it would have to be shifted to another world, or the use of whatever it was would be lost to Earth. I suspect there would be reluctance to move it, and it is likely that it would be done more or less at the last minute. Now then, Janoff, remember the old man on New Earth who filled your ears with his version of Earth's history?"
"Mona Lee?"
"Yes, he. Did he not say, in reference to the establishment of New Earth, that what was left of Earth's population was brought to the planet?"
Pellerat said, "Do you mean, old chap, that what we're searching for is now on New Earth? brought there by the last of Earth's population to leave?
Trevise said, Might that not be so?
New Earth is scarcely better known to the galaxy in general than Earth is, and the inhabitants are suspiciously eager to keep all outworlders away.
We were there, put in Bliss. We didn't find anything.
We weren't looking for anything but the whereabouts of Earth.
Pellerat said in a puzzled way, But we're looking for something with a high technology. Something that can remove information from under the nose of the Second Foundation itself. And even from under the nose, excuse me, Bliss, of Gaia. Those people on New Earth may be able to control their patch of weather and may have some techniques of biotechnology at their disposal. But I think you'll admit that their level of technology is, on the whole, quite low.
Bliss nodded.
I agree with Pell.
Trevise said, We're judging from very little. We never did see the men of the fishing fleet. We never saw any part of the island but the small patch we landed on. What might we have found if we had explored more thoroughly? After all, we didn't recognize the fluorescent lights till we saw them in action. And if it appeared that the technology was low, appeared, I say.
Yes, said Bliss, clearly unconvinced.
That could be part of the veil intended to obscure the truth.
Impossible, said Bliss.
Impossible? It was you who told me back on Gaia that at Trantor, the larger civilization was deliberately held at a level of low technology in order to hide the small kernel of Second Foundationers. Why might not the same strategy be used on New Earth?
Do you suggest, then, that we return to New Earth and face infection again, this time to have it activated?
Sexual intercourse is undoubtedly a particularly pleasant mode of infection, but it may not be the only one.
Trevise shrugged. I am not eager to return to New Earth, but we may have to.
May?
May. After all, there is another possibility.
What is that?
New Earth circles the star the people call Alpha. But Alpha is part of a binary system. Might there not be a habitable planet circling Alpha's companion as well?
Too dim, I should think, said Bliss, shaking her head. The companion is only a quarter as bright as Alpha is.
Dim, but not too dim. If there is a planet fairly close to the star, it might do.
Pellerat said, Does the computer say anything about any planets for the companion?
Trevise smiled grimly. I checked that. There are 5 planets of moderate size. No gas giants.
And are any of the 5 planets habitable?
The computer gives no information at all about the planets, other than their number, and the fact that they aren't large.
Oh, said Pellerat, deflated.
Trevise said, That's nothing to be disappointed about. None of the spacer worlds are to be found in the computer at all. The information on Alpha itself is minimal. These things are hidden deliberately. And if almost nothing is known about Alpha's companion, that might almost be regarded as a good sign.
Then, said Bliss in a businesslike manner, what you are planning to do is this. Visit the companion, and if that draws a blank, return to Alpha itself.
Yes, and this time, when we reach the island of New Earth, we will be prepared. We will examine the entire island meticulously before landing. And, Bliss, I expect you to use your mental abilities to shield...
And at that moment, the far star lurched slightly, as though it had undergone a ship-sized hiccup. And Trevise cried out, halfway between anger and perplexity, Who's at the controls? And even as he asked, he knew very well who was. 95. Phelim, at the computer console, was completely absorbed. Her small, long-fingered hands were stretched wide in order to fit the faintly gleaming handmarks on the desk. Phelim's hands seemed to sink into the material of the desk, even though it was clearly felt to be hard and slippery. She had seen Trevise hold his hands so on a number of occasions, and she hadn't seen him do more than that, though it was quite plain to her that in so doing he controlled the ship. On occasion, Phelim had seen Trevise close his eyes, and she closed hers now. After a moment or two, it was almost as though she heard a faint, far-off voice. Far off, but sounding in her own head, through, she dimly realized, her transducer lobes. They were even more important than her hands. She strained to make out the words. "Instructions," it said, almost pleadingly. "What are your instructions?" Phelim didn't say anything. She had never witnessed Trevise saying anything to the computer. But she knew what it was that she wanted with all her heart. She wanted to go back to Solaria, to the comforting endlessness of the mansion, to Jemby. 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 She wanted to go there, and as she thought of the world she loved, she imagined it visible on the viewscreen, as she had seen other worlds she didn't want. She opened her eyes and stared at the viewscreen, willing some other world there than this hateful earth. Then, staring at what she saw, imagining it to be Solaria, she hated the empty galaxy to which she had been introduced against her will. Tears came to her eyes, and the ship trembled. She could feel that tremble, and she swayed a little in response. And then she heard loud steps in the corridor outside, and when she opened her eyes, Trevise's face, distorted, filled her vision, blocking out the viewscreen, which held all she wanted. He was shouting something, but she paid no attention. It was he who had taken her from Solaria by killing Bander, and it was he who was preventing her from returning by thinking only of Earth, and she was not going to listen to him. She was going to take the ship to Solaria, and with the intensity of her resolve, it trembled again. 96. Bliss clutched wildly at Trevise's arm. "Don't! Don't!" She clung strongly, holding him back, while Pellerat stood confused and frozen in the background. Trevise was shouting, "Take your hands off the computer! Bliss, don't get in my way! I don't want to hurt you!" Bliss said in a tone that seemed almost exhausted, "Don't offer violence to the child. I'd have to hurt you against all instructions." Trevise's eyes darted wildly from Fallon to Bliss. He said, "Then you get her off, Bliss. Now." Bliss pushed him away with surprising strength, drawing it, Trevise thought afterward, from Gaia, perhaps. "Phelim," she said, "lift your hands."
"No," shrieked Phelim. "I want the ship to go to Solaria. I want it to go there. There."
She nodded toward the viewscreen with her head, unwilling to let even one hand release its pressure on the desk for the purpose. But Bliss reached for the child's shoulders, and as her hands touched Phelim, the youngster began to tremble. Bliss's voice grew soft.
"Now, Phelim, tell the computer to be as it was and come with me. Come with me."
Her hands stroked the child, who collapsed in an agony of weeping. Phelim's hands left the desk, and Bliss, catching her under the armpits, lifted her into a standing position. She turned her, held her firmly against her breast, and allowed the child to smother her wrenching sobs there. Bliss said to Trevise, who was now standing dumbly in the doorway, "Step out of the way, Trevise, and don't touch either of us as we pass." Trevise stepped quickly to one side. Bliss paused a moment, saying in a low voice to Trevise, "I had to get into her mind for a moment. If I've caused any damage, I won't forgive you easily." It was Trevise's impulse to tell her he didn't care a cubic millimeter of vacuum for Phalum's mind, that it was the computer for which he feared. Against the concentrated glare of Gaia, however, surely it wasn't only Bliss whose sole expression could inspire the moment of cold terror he felt, he kept silent. He remained silent for a perceptible period, and motionless as well, after Bliss and Phalum had disappeared into their room. He remained so, in fact, until Pellerat said softly, "Golan, are you all right? She didn't hurt you, did she?" Trevise shook his head vigorously, as though to shake off the touch of paralysis that had afflicted him. "I'm all right. The real question is whether that's all right." He sat down at the computer console, his hands resting on the two handmarks which Phalum's hands had so recently covered. "Well?" said Pellerat anxiously. Trevise shrugged. "It seems to respond normally. I might conceivably find something wrong later on, but there's nothing that seems off now." Then, more angrily, "The computer should not combine effectively with any hands other than mine. But in that hermaphrodite's case, it wasn't the hands alone. It was the transducer lobes, I'm sure." "But what made the ship shake? It shouldn't do that, should it?" "No. It's a gravitic ship, and we shouldn't have these inertial effects. But that she monster..." He paused, looking angry again. "Yes?" "I suspect she faced the computer with two self-contradictory demands, and each with such force that the computer had no choice but to attempt to do both things at once. In the attempt to do the impossible, the computer must have released the inertia-free condition of the ship momentarily. At least, that's what I think happened." And then somehow his face smoothed out. "And that might be a good thing, too. For it occurs to me now that all my talk about Alpha Centauri and its companion was flapdoodle. I know now where Earth must have transferred its secret." 97. Pellerat stared, then ignored the final remark and went back to an earlier puzzle. "In what way did Phalum ask for two self-contradictory things?" "Well, she said she wanted the ship to go to Solaria." "Yes, of course she would." "But what did she mean by Solaria? She can't recognize Solaria from space. She's never really seen it from space. She was asleep when we left that world in a hurry, and despite her readings in your library, together with whatever Bliss has told her, I imagine she can't really grasp the truth of a galaxy of hundreds of billions of stars and millions of populated planets. Brought up as she was, underground and alone, it's all she can do to grasp the bare concept that there are different worlds. But how many? Two? Three? Four? To her, any world she sees is likely to be Solaria, and given the strength of her wishful thinking, is Solaria. And since I presume Bliss has tried to quiet her by hinting that if we don't find Earth, we'll take her back to Solaria, she may even have worked up the notion that Solaria is close to Earth. And since I presume Bliss has tried to quiet her by hinting that if we don't find Earth, will take her back to Solaria. She may even have worked up the notion that Solaria is close to Earth.
But how can you tell this, Golan? What makes you think it's so?
She as much as told us so, Genoff, when we burst in upon her. She cried out that she wanted to go to Solaria, and then added, "There, there," nodding her head at the viewscreen. And what is on the viewscreen? Earth's satellite. It wasn't there when I left the machine before dinner. Earth was. But Phelim must have pictured the satellite in her mind when she asked for Solaria, and the computer, in response, must therefore have focused on the satellite. Believe me, Janoff, I know how this computer works. Who would know better?
Pellerat looked at the thick crescent of light on the viewscreen and said thoughtfully,
"It was called Moon in at least one of Earth's languages, Luna in another language, probably many other names, too. Imagine the confusion, old chap, on a world with numerous languages, the misunderstandings, the complications, the..."
"Moon," said Trevise. "Well, that's simple enough. Then, too, come to think of it, it may be that the child tried instinctively to move the ship by means of its transducer lobes, using the ship's own energy source, and that may have helped produce the momentary inertial confusion. But none of that matters, Janoff. What does matter is that all this has brought this moon, yes, I like the name, to the screen and magnified it, and there it still is. I'm looking at it now and wondering."
"Wondering what, Golan?"
"At the size of it." "We tend to ignore satellites, Janoff. They're such little things when they exist at all. This one is different, though. It's a world. It has a diameter of about 3,500 kilometers."
"A world? Surely you wouldn't call it a world. It can't be habitable. Even a 3,500-kilometer diameter is too small. It has no atmosphere. I can tell that just by looking at it. No clouds. The circular curve against space is sharp. So is the inner curve that bounds the light and dark hemisphere."
Trevise nodded. "You're getting to be a seasoned space traveler, Janoff. You're right. No air, no water. But that only means the moon's not habitable on its unprotected surface. What about underground?"
"Underground?" said Pellerat doubtfully.
"Yes, underground. Why not? Earth's cities were underground, you tell me. We know that Trantor was underground. Camporeon has much of its capital city underground. The Solarian mansions were almost entirely underground. It's a very common state of affairs."
"But Golan, in every one of these cases, people were living on a habitable planet. The surface was habitable, too, with an atmosphere and with an ocean. Is it possible to live underground when the surface is uninhabitable?"
"Come, Janoff, think. Where are we living right now? The far star is a tiny world that has an uninhabitable surface. There's no air or water on the outside. Yet we live inside in perfect comfort. The galaxy is full of space stations and space settlements of infinite variety, to say nothing of spaceships, and they're all uninhabitable, except for the interior. Consider the moon a gigantic spaceship."
"With a crew inside?"
"Yes. Millions of people, for all we know, and plants and animals, and an advanced technology. Look, Janoff, doesn't it make sense? If Earth, in its last days, could send out a party of settlers to a planet orbiting Alpha Centauri, and if, possibly with Imperial help, they could attempt to terraform it, seed its oceans, build dry land where there was none, could Earth not also send a party to its satellite and terraform its interior?"
Pellerat said reluctantly,
I suppose so. It would be done. If Earth has something to hide, why send it over a parsec away, when it could be hidden on a world less than 100 millionth the distance to Alpha? And the moon would be a more efficient hiding place from the psychological standpoint. No one would think of satellites in connection with life. For that matter, I didn't. With the moon an inch before my nose, my thoughts went herring off to Alpha. If it hadn't been for Phelim... His lips tightened, and he shook his head. I suppose I'll have to credit her for that. Bliss surely will if I don't. Pellerat said, But see here, old man, if there's something hiding under the surface of the moon, how do we find it? There must be millions of square kilometers of surface. Roughly 40 million. And we would have to inspect all of that. Looking for what? An opening? Some sort of airlock? Trevia said, Put that way, it would seem rather a task. But we're not just looking for objects. We're looking for life, and for intelligent life at that. And we've got Bliss. And detecting intelligence is her talent, isn't it? 98. Bliss looked at Trevise accusingly. I've finally got her to sleep. I had the hardest time. She was wild. Fortunately, I don't think I've damaged her. Trevise said coldly, You might try removing her fixation on Jemby, you know, since I certainly have no intention of ever going back to Solaria. Just remove her fixation, is that it? What do you know about such things, Trevise? You've never sensed a mind. You haven't the faintest idea of its complexity. If you knew anything at all about it, you wouldn't talk about removing a fixation as though it were just a matter of scooping jam out of a jar. Well, weaken it at least. I might weaken it a bit after a month of careful de-threading. What do you mean, de-threading? To someone who doesn't know, it can't be explained. What are you going to do with the child, then? I don't know yet. It will take a lot of consideration. In that case, said Trevise, let me tell you what we're going to do with the ship. I know what you're going to do. It's back to New Earth, and another try at the lovely Hiroko, if she'll promise not to infect you this time. Trevise kept his face expressionless. He said, No, as a matter of fact, I've changed my mind. We're going to the moon, which is the name of the satellite, according to Janoff. The satellite? Because it's the nearest world at hand? I hadn't thought of that. Nor I. Nor would anyone have thought of it. Nowhere in the galaxy is there a satellite worth thinking about. But this satellite, in being large, is unique. What's more, Earth's anonymity covers it as well. Anyone who can't find the Earth can't find the moon either. Is it habitable? Not on the surface. But it is not radioactive, not at all. So it isn't absolutely uninhabitable. It may have life. It may be teeming with life, in fact, under the surface. And of course, you'll be able to tell if that's so once we get close enough. Bliss shrugged. I'll try. But then, what made you suddenly think of trying the satellite? Trevise said quietly, Something Phelim did when she was at the controls. Bliss waited as though expecting more, then shrugged again. Whatever it was, I suspect you wouldn't have gotten the inspiration if you had followed your own impulse and killed her. I had no intention of killing her, Bliss. Bliss waved her hand. All right, let it be.
Are we moving toward the moon now?
Yes. As a matter of caution, I'm not going too fast, but if all goes well, we'll be in its vicinity in 30 hours.